ladies and gentlemen, I come before you today as a man dedicated to doing the right thing, a man dedicated to delivering moderately well-provided news at a moderately good time with mixed results.
Pray hands.
I'm Justin. This is Stevie. This is Sound Mind. Let's break it down.
Let's break it down. So, first off, very important. Justin had a gig last night.
I did.
With one guest that we've had on our podcast.
Stevie.
Daniel Taylor. Right. So, Daniel Taylor, who hopefully you guys remember, is a very interesting fellow, creative. Yes. He's got a neat sound.
He lived in Alaska.
See, that just makes him even more interesting.
Yeah.
Like, he came out of the boondocks with a punk, pop, hip-hop, trap thing going on.
Yeah.
Right? And so
it is a thing.
It's a thing that came out of the boondocks when Daniel brought it out of where he came from.
Yep.
I'm sure other people have brought elements. Anyway, point is, last night, show, Knitting Factory, Daniel Taylor, his music, live guitar, a.k.a. Justin.
That is
awesome. You guys had a bass player and a drummer.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember their last name.
That's exciting. I mean, just even the set right there, you know, with hip-hop infused live musicians. Love it.
Yeah, and the drummer's great. The bassist was great. Their names are Wes and Nathan. I don't remember the last names. Like I said, I met them like last week.
Right. That's so, okay. And it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We played songs and performed them as
well. That's great. That's so good. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah, just for the record, Justin slept like 2 hours last night.
I did.
He is not on opium or been smoking any marijuana.
Yeah.
He drank a milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably what kept him up all night.
At Perkins.
Actually, it was, yeah. We talked earlier and you were talking about some of the mistakes you made during the set.
I was obsessing, yeah. I was obsessing over my mistakes.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do I fix that in the future?
Yeah.
And the answer is by doing it better.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's profound.
I know. Yeah. I thought about it for like 8 hours, and that's the answer I came up with.
All right, great. So if you were in the same situation today to play the same set, like in an hour.
Like in an hour?
Could you do it better in an hour from now?
No.
No.
Because I haven't practiced it since I played it.
Right.
There was really only one song where I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, the rest I felt pretty good about.
Yeah.
But there was a song where I legitimately forgot what I was supposed to play.
Right.
It's just completely escaped my brain.
Oh, wow.
That has never happened before.
Wow.
And I was just like, well, I'm a fake it. And I'm not great with scales.
Right.
I'm not great with modes.
Yeah.
So
here we go.
It was a little bit of an adventure. I create my own scales, as I like to put it. I do it backwards.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense, and I realize this. But what I do is I start playing it, so I hear the song.
Yeah.
And I start playing when I'm learning the song for the first time. I start playing it. I'm like, okay, that's bad. It's a bad note.
Right.
I erase it from my scale, which is, at that point, every single note.
Yeah.
And then I work backwards. So every time I hit a bum note, I'm like, hey, don't play that for this song, which is in the key of A, or whatever.
Instead of that's right.
Yeah, so I eliminate all the bad ones, and then I'm like, okay, that sounds better than that one.
Right.
Right, at that moment.
Yeah.
And then I find pockets.
Yeah.
To put those good notes in.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's wrong. You're supposed to do it the other way.
Well, which is why you stayed up all night thinking about all the bad stuff you did instead of celebrating the good stuff you did. But part of that probably makes you the musician that you are.
Yeah. I think if I just took the time to learn the scales, that would probably be helpful. Because I would just know, like, cause, you know, Daniel would say, oh, it's in the key of A. And I'd be like,
Yeah.
And I would know all the notes in the song from the get-go.
Or you'd hit one and be like, oh, no, I was playing the key E. He said A. Bop, bop, bop,
bop, bop, bop. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was good. I'm excited to do it again.
Yeah.
But better next time.
Right. And you weren't playing your guys' stuff. It's not like you were, you know, that would be different too, you know.
Yeah. I honestly would feel like because I was doing it on such short notice.
Right.
I was writing my parts very simply, mm-hmm. because I didn't want to overcomplicate it. And I wanted to just be able to remember it and play it, which obviously didn't happen exactly how I thought.
Yeah.
But, so the music I write for my band is definitely more complex. But I know it way better. So I feel like.
Well, and musically, your guys' stuff is more complex, I think, than.
There's more parts per song, definitely, in a lot of them. Like, for instance, Wolf on a Chain, which is only 3 minutes, has like 7 parts.
Right?
7? Something like that. Whereas, like, most songs that length have, like, maybe 5.
Yeah.
So, so that in and of itself. And then I'm not just playing, like, chords.
Right.
For my band. Mm-hmm. I'm playing some lead stuff, too. So, and I did play some lead stuff for Daniel. But it was kind of like a mishmash.
Yeah. You know,
where I would just play whatever felt right.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm excited. I didn't get to go, which I wanted to, but I've been getting ready for this camp trip that we're going on.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Are you going to hook some bears?
No, but I am bringing my bear gun. I have a big bear gun, just in case. Yes. Grizzlies freak me out.
Yeah, with good reason.
Yeah.
They're pretty aggressive, right?
Yeah, they're just, I don't know why. I run into people like they're like cougars, and I'm like, psh.
Well, I mean, there was a guy that like choked a mountain lion to death.
Yeah, oh, see?
A while back.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know if he did.
There was like a whole press release, and he looked like jacked up.
Yeah.
Wow. But, I mean, he never has anything to prove again for the rest of his life.
Right, yeah.
Because people are like, you ain't nothing. And you're like, no, I choked a mountain lion to death.
Yeah, after he took this chunk of me out.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, you're right. I'm an idiot for questioning your manliness.
Right.
But... what was I saying?
I have no idea.
Bears. Something about bears.
Hey, mountain lions aren't as scary because this dude killed one with his bare hands.
Yeah, I don't...
like he killed the bear first, used its hand.
Took the hands off,
yeah.
Put them on his hands, and just swiped at the mountain lion until it was dead.
My wife always makes jokes about bare hands.
Or bare arms. You have the right to bare arms.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. I'm going to throw that in the mix now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
do it.
It's my corny little repertoire of
just
old man jokes.
Same thing with bare hands, but you just put them on your arms.
Right.
The whole arm.
Right, and then you got like a baseball bat type of thing going on.
Uh-huh.
It's more like a club than like a dagger type of situation.
It's true.
Should we jump into this topic? Wow. Okay, he seems very confident and certain. We're going to jump into this topic.
I'm lucid.
Or this article.
Mm-hmm.
Let's jump into this article and then see where it takes us.
From the illustrious publication, The Atlantic.
That's right. The Atlantic.
Repping The Atlantic today, guys.
Yeah. And there's I think the title of the article is actually a statistic. Is that right?
You are correct.
All right.
Would you like to hear the statistics, Stevie?
If you are ready... then I am ready.
It is 92%. That's the number.
92%
of top 10 Billboard songs are about sex. Whoa. I said it. The dirty language word that is sex.
Sex. Interesting.
People have it. They do it with each other. It's in songs.
92% of top 10 songs, apparently. Not apparently. This is real facts.
I don't know. I don't know what parts of this article to excerpt, so I'm just gonna choose random parts.
Okay. kind of like you did last night when you were playing the set.
Exactly. It's 92% of the 174 songs that made it into the Billboard Top 10 in 2009. So
170, how many?
174. So over the course of a year. 92%
of 174. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That means, wow, there's just a little tiny handful of songs that didn't, that weren't about sex.
Yeah.
Wow. What else you got?
Well, other things.
Sweet. Pull one out.
Don't tell me that, man.
Things in the article.
Yeah.
Got to be clear with this guy, especially yeah. when he's running on fumes.
It didn't load all the way, so I can only read part of it.
Okay.
But basically what it's saying is in most of the genres that there are.
Right.
Sex outperformed in terms of vocabulary or topic. Sex outperformed every other topic in any genre.
Wow.
Country, hip-hop, R&B, pop, everything.
Interesting.
And I think we betray ourselves a little bit because it's all signs point to the fact that we oversex. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In America.
Right.
It's like everything's about sex.
Right.
Like, I mean, I don't know how far we wanted to get into this whole thing, but like, for instance, like butts being sexual is not a worldwide thing.
Right.
Like, we just wanted to make more things sexual.
Right.
So that's what we did. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like we took something that was the two pads that you sit on that are fatty so that you don't hurt your boot, E.
On the floor tonight.
Sorry. Like, you know, you got some bones back there, right? You got
yeah.
your tailbone and everything. Right. So it's like little pads to protect those bones from being sat upon. Thine hips, right. as it were.
Like stools.
Like little
stools like these.
Two little, yeah. two little stools. Those are somehow sexual now.
Right.
And when people, when you say that, you're like, well, what is it about a butt that is sexual? People are like, well, obviously the fact that it is a butt. And you're like, solid logic. Thanks, bro.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, so I think we betray ourselves a little bit because it's all signs point in that direction, but nobody's really addressing it. It's just kind right. of like, it just is,
yeah.
and it's the status quo.
Right. And 92% of top 10 songs are talking about it, while
in 2009.
Or probably 92% of, I mean, well, whatever, now I'm jumping out there, but who knows what the specific number is. But I'd say pop culture, pop media in general, large percentage,
yeah.
Overvaluing, I'd say, sexuality. Let's not yeah. even say sex, you know, sexuality, just, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't look like this girl, you know, you're not sexy, or if you don't, you know, have an eight pack and
yeah,
whatever.
If you don't have an ab like me.
Right. An ab. Like, nice.
I have one ab, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So so pop culture, pop media is talking about it, you know, and not you know, Billboard's talking about it. Are people talking about it in other contexts?
Yes.
Not enough, I don't think, but
well, they're not breaking it down.
Right.
They're not talking about it in a way that is productive or insightful.
Right.
But, you know, I think sex is naturally on. I'm not a psychiatrist, Stevie.
Come on, dude.
Let me just open.
You
with
might
that.
Be. You might have an inner psychologist in you. Psychiatrist.
Either or.
Right. Come
but
on.
But let me tell
it.
You right now.
Spray me with the facts.
Well, don't mind me as I procure the facts and spray you down with them.
That's your cue, dude.
I need some water.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. This was too much fun. I'm just laughing at you.
What was
the whole
I
time.
Saying? Oh, yes, the facts.
You're not a psychologist.
I'm not a psychiatrist. Or
a
psychiatrist.
Right.
As we established.
Yes.
But it seems to me that. What was I saying?
You're still digging for it.
Oh my God.
You completely forgot.
I did.
Wow.
Hold on.
Like, hold on. We're on. We're live.
I know. Well, we're not live.
Well,
it's pre-recorded.
We're alive.
We are alive, hopefully.
Yeah.
What I was saying was, okay, let me go back to the beginning.
Okay.
I'm not a psychiatrist, but I think that we, as humans, we have sex on the brain for a reason.
Yes.
And it's because our inner nature is saying, reproduce, populate. Do not let the human race die out.
Right.
So I am causing you as a male to, and I'm just talking about like the majority of people, but you as a human male are heavily attracted to this human female,
right,
so that you two may reproduce and a child will be born and the human race will not die out. Right.
That's, yeah.
Forward thinking.
Wow.
Your inner whatever.
Wow. I do think that there's an inner psychologist and psychiatrist in you.
Well, I was, that's not the part, but.
Wow. Wow. There's more. Okay.
There's
go.
More. But we are so averse in this country to having children. And so we're like suppressing the part of us that is like, have kids, have kids, have kids. And it just makes us think about sex all the time. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
That's an interesting thought, yeah.
It could be that we're all just depraved and horrible. Mm. That could be it, too.
Yeah. Well, it could be that 92% of the top 10 songs are about sex, and so we hear sex, see sex, think about sex, plus have this burning desire for sex in us.
Yeah.
That makes us think about it often.
I do think it is a little self-perpetuating, but I mean, you know, going back to some of the oldest intact geographical findings that we have, you know, you get some Greek pottery with a bunch of penises on it.
Yes.
You know,
right.
And the penises are engaged in all kinds of activities.
Right.
Sexual activities.
But they had a lot of, they had paintings about sex.
Yeah.
They were talking about, they were having orgy parties.
Orgy parties.
Yeah.
Did you know that the word orgy actually just meant a group activity? And then it gained a sexual connotation.
Interesting.
Over time.
That one's probably going to be hard to repair.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll
I'm not even going to try.
Get that word back. So
I don't think so.
No.
But basically what I'm saying is if it is self-perpetuating, it kind of seems like it's beyond the point because it's always been that
right.
way.
Yes.
It's like we've always – it's more – I would argue that it's more like we just – it's because it's all we think about. We infuse it into everything.
Yeah.
Right? Art? This art's going to be about sex. You know?
Right.
And it's like almost like we're devaluing everything that we do because we betray the fact that we have a one-track mind.
Right.
I keep saying betray.
Do you?
Is there something emotional happening? Are you a psychiatrist? Can you tell me if there's something going on?
If there is, I wouldn't tell you because I want you to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get to the end of this for you, Justin.
Okay.
I would not want to betray you and tell you what I'm doing, you know, that's bringing it out of you.
Right.
Too early.
So I just want to point out before we go any further.
Yes.
I realize that I do this a lot. I lean forward and I do this.
Okay.
It's probably pretty annoying if for anyone that watches.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be honest. I don't really care. This is the most comfortable position for this stool. That's why I'm doing it.
Right. Do you see what he's doing here?
I'm doing the opposite of an apology.
He is. And this I'm going to tell you why. Because I'm leading him down an emotional pathway that he doesn't want to go in.
I'm
so he's going to throw shade on my stools to try to avert me from bringing him into
You're right, Stevie.
Deeper levels of healing.
You, once again, I am betrayed by my own mouth.
So, okay, I want to dive into this. I don't know if we were planning on it or not, but like, so reproduction, do you think that that's pretty important? Like, to actually make a child, like, that's crazy to me. That's like a powerful thing that we can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the only things that we'll do that will impact future generations.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, so it's interesting to me, like, I didn't plan on going into this, but it's just, I feel like we should.
Sure.
It's interesting.
It's music and philosophy.
Stuff. That's right. So let's talk about this. Giving life is, it's like one of the most powerful things that a human being can do.
That's why we like gardening so much.
Right. It's interesting. So, you know, I just think about this, like abortion, you know, like we take the most one of the most powerful things that we can do, if not the most powerful thing that we can do with our life, and the act that makes it happen. And we, I feel like, throw this shallowness over it.
Yeah. We water down the conversation.
We water down the conversation and then also make means for people to not have to be responsible for the choice they made in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah.
By creating easy way outs and then backing off the subject and being like, oh.
We just want it to be easy, I think. Yeah. We want it to be easy to do.
Right.
And I don't know that it should be easy.
I don't think it should be. It's one of the biggest, like I said, it's like I think one of the most powerful things that you're going to do with your life.
Yeah, and I think what I said about, you know, the only thing that you will do in your lifetime to impact, well, probably, like most people, the only thing you'll do that will impact future generations is have kids or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think abortion is part of it, you know? So if you, for whatever reason, decide to, you know, deprive the world, if you want to put it that way, deprive the world of a person that you created on purpose.
Accidentally.
I disagree with that. Unless you're a victim of rape.
Yes.
Sex is not an accident.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And
you had sex on purpose.
Lack of preparation is just lack of preparation.
Yeah. So it's you did it on purpose. You know? Yeah. I mean, there's like very few circumstances where that's not the case. Because unless you're a complete stranger to biology, like basic biology, which there it could be that there's those people out there.
Oh, there are. I know some.
You know what sex is. You know what sex does. You know how babies are made. Mm-hmm. You know, you're hopefully an adult by the time you start having unprotected sex, I guess. So you know what you're doing. If you're a guy that is being an idiot, it's like, what are you doing? Don't be an idiot.
Right.
You should be in full control of what's happening.
Yeah.
So if you are okay with having a kid and your lady friend is also okay with having a kid, okay, then great. But otherwise, take the necessary precautions. Don't be an idiot.
Right.
It's a first off, it's usually more expensive than just buying a condom. Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not paying for the abortion, right, you still have to get medical professionals involved. That's idiotic when you could just prevent the whole thing in the first place.
And that's what I'm talking about is
the, is that what you meant by lack of preparation?
Well, yeah, partly. But what I'm talking about is the extreme weight of the decision that is and entails, and then the total lack of responsibility that we have infused in our culture. I mean,
it's really sad.
That's something that we see all the time.
It's so backwards.
Yeah. It blows me away. Even when I talk to, you know, people that disagree, like I hate abortion. I understand that some women are, you know, in abusive situations and there's like these things that happen. I'm not referring to those situations, but in general, like I hate abortion. To be honest, even with abortion off to the side, I hate people not being responsible for their bad choices.
Yeah.
How are you going to teach anybody? And it just blows my mind that us as a whole nation take the most weighty repercussion of one of the most important decisions we'll ever make and rip all the responsibility out and then call it, oh, it's the woman's choice.
And then if you criticize it, it's like, you can't because it's a sacred cow. You know what I mean? Can't go after the sacred cow.
Yeah.
Like you cannot touch it, talk about it. You can't approach it. You can't broach the subject. Even if you're a woman, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of women that are anti-abortion.
Yeah.
And they bring it up. So your opinion doesn't matter if you're a man because you're a man. And what could you possibly have to say about a woman's body if you're a man?
Right.
Even if you're a doctor.
Yeah.
Which
is interesting because if you do impregnate a woman and she chooses to have the baby, you have no choice whether or not your money is going to come out of your paycheck and provide child support for that child.
Yeah.
But somehow when the woman is pregnant, she has all the choice on whether or not the baby is going to be born or aborted.
Right. And, yeah, and
it's just weird.
And we're not talking about, like, we're not talking about, what's the word?
Make one up.
So, like, let me just use a scenario because I'm brain farting.
Mm-hmm.
So say the mother does not want the child and the father does. Why not just have the baby and give it to the father? The father has custody, raises the child.
Right.
Like, why? And if you describe abortion not to a human, it sounds so barbaric. Mm-hmm. And I've done that too before, in various situations, and describe, you know, just describe what's happening, but as if it's happening to a creature,
mm-hmm.
and people are like disgusted.
Mm-hmm.
They're flabbergasted.
Mm-hmm.
How could you do that to a person, to a thing?
Right.
But it's fine as long as it's in the womb, I guess. But
yeah, we're talking.
You can't see it.
Right.
So
it right.
So
you
it's
can't
not happening.
See it. Yeah. Not listening to the heartbeat. That's a huge one. Go listen to the heartbeat. At that you can hear it 12 weeks, I think it is. Well, with the right equipment, you can actually see it earlier than that, but you can hear it on the, you know, the heart monitor.
Yeah.
But we were talking about this earlier, I think, before we turned the camera on, about our overvaluing beauty. Or were we on camera when we... I don't remember.
I think we were on,
yeah,
but we weren't on.
I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so our overvaluing beauty, and I think that's what a lot of it comes down to is, you know, oh, I don't want my body to be affected in a negative way by this child.
Seems kind of shallow, Stevie.
How could you even say that? It is shallow. And I'm not trying to throw women under the bus, and, I mean, you said guys being, you know, everybody's responsible in this choice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't want this negative effect on my body because of going through with this. You know, I don't – or the emotional pain, you know, because regardless what anybody says, women are going to deal with some emotions when they give up their child or they have an abortion. And I see even on the side where people are, and for me, this isn't just politics bug me. Right?
Yeah.
I like to just.
Let's remove politics from the equation entirely. I am not a Republican. I'm not a right winger. You're probably not.
No.
Yeah.
But I like to talk about issues and like on a moral stance, like let's get into this and let's dissect it. Cause there, to me, most things, if you dive in and you're honest, like there's an apparent. You know,
there's
obviously on the side of, you know, not having people take responsibility for that choice, some things that are getting swept under the rug, just in general with doing that. So let's not hide from that. Let's talk about it. But even when I talk to people that have had abortions, women in particular, even women that have been on the other side, pro-choice, for lack of a better word, not to get political, but, you know, believe that abortion is, you know, is okay.
I always just say pro-abortion and anti-abortion.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. So even when I talk to them, when we get to talking about abortions that have been had, like there's an emotion. It's real that they've dealt with sadness. They've dealt and still do when the topic comes up.
Yeah.
I don't think it's something that ever goes away fully, you know. So why is that?
And there's, you know, abortion survivors, which is the uncomfortable elephant in the room.
Yeah.
That are born unexpectedly or whatever. You know, there's a failed abortion. They're born. And they survive.
Right.
And they're saying, am I not valuable
right.
as a person? Mm-hmm. Look at me. I've grown up. I have a doctorate.
Yeah.
Like, how have I not benefited society?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so how the hubris that we have that we think that our children are not as important as us,
right.
you know, and it's disgusting, really.
Yeah.
I mean, because like, how could you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if and I'm of course, I'm speaking in non-moral terms. I'm speaking in terms of societal good. Right.
Yeah.
But even just from that front, it's like, what if you knew that your kid was going to cure cancer.
Right.
Like, would you kill him?
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. would you do it if you knew? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, and that's not an argument in and of itself. It's like, it's kind of a what if scenario.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
But it's getting to look at the issue, like, and ask questions. That, to me, is like, as people, like, in my own life, I want to get better at doing this life and affecting people around me and raising my kids and, you know, doing business and, you know, communication. I want to get better. So you have to look at the results of what you do, how they affect people, what the return is. I mean, it's just like business. That's what you do in business, right?
Yeah.
You measure success and, you know, and see, oh, this is working. This is creating a healthier environment for my employees. And you cut the things out that are holding it back from being successful, right? And you continue to grow. As people, we need to do that with decisions, you know? So to me, it's, you know, again, taking politics out of things. Like, let's look at a situation. Let's dive into this conversation, even if we don't agree, and, like, get to the bottom of something. Because never when I have a conversation about something real that I believe needs to change is – When I'm having a conversation with somebody and I feel like the responsibility is being swept under the rug, or they're trying to, they're trying to, kind of like I was joking about earlier with you, like,
oh,
you were
deflecting.
They were trying to deflect or change the subject, or, you know, no, that's give a padded answer, like, to go around. You see it all the time during campaigns with politicians when they get asked hard questions, right? They kind of.
And it's pathetic.
It is pathetic.
It's pathetic when they do it, and it's pathetic when other people do it.
And there's no...
By they, I mean
I don't think that there's any human being that can't see that for what it is. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I'm not afraid to have a conversation with somebody about the things I believe and be challenged on it, because I want to know the truth, and I want to do the things that are going to benefit my life the best and those around me the best, right? That's what I'm after.
Well, I mean, I think you have to be comfortable with your own beliefs in order to be challenged.
Yeah.
And was that a zinger? Abso-frickin-litly it was. Because that's at the end of the day, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're not comfortable being challenged, then you know you're wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, or at least you're afraid that you are.
Yeah. I think that for me, like, entering into debates about, you know, because there's some things in my life that I believe at this moment in time that could change in a year from now, because I keep growing. And so I like entering into those conversations even when I'm, you know, slightly unsure, because, again, I'm trying to get better. And that conversation, I'm going to leave with more thoughts, more ideas, and I'm going to analyze that later and be like, wow, that was a really good point. You know, well, I never thought of it like that.
Yeah. If you're entering into it like I'm right and you're wrong, there's nothing appealing about that conversation.
Right.
But you shouldn't enter into any kind of dialogue without being open to the idea that you are incorrect.
Right. If you haven't even thought of the possibility that what you believe could be wrong, you're definitely not stable in your position.
Yeah. But you, at the same time, you need to be comfortable enough as a person that your whole world isn't going to fall apart just because you're now questioning a belief that you have.
Right. Which, yeah, that's happened. Whew, those were rough times.
The house is falling down.
Can I shift a little bit?
Sure.
Same kind of topic. But so it's interesting to me. We're talking about 92% of all top 10 pop hits about sex. Or sexuality.
Well, all songs that entered the top 10 in a whole year, the year of 2009. So that was 174 different songs that entered the Billboard top 10.
Oh, that was just from 2009.
Yeah. Oh, it could be more now. It could be less. I don't know.
Right. That'd be interesting to find out. But so here's an interesting thought. I'm going to pick on hip hop for a minute.
Yeah. Do it.
I've done it before. But so I don't know what the percentage is, but stats from 2009 show all genres of music, top 10, 92% sex and sexuality, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a large percentage of drugs and violence that are going to go into that, you know, with the hip hop scene.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's all over the place now. You know what I mean? Hip hop used to be exclusive in that, but you know, there's violence, there's, you know, a lot, and even just pop music. I'd say sex is probably the biggest one. But with that said, like, let's take these artists and you tell me how it makes sense. You're an artist and 92% of the music you put out maybe is about sex, violence, and drugs.
Sure.
And then every now and again, 8% is about this social stance against racism or women's rights or discrimination of any kind. And the masses are going to have huge buy-in. Like, way to go. You're a champion for the cause.
Like, wow. We've got a social justice paladin over here. Wow. Level 90 social justice paladin.
Right. It's like you forgot about the other 92%.
Yeah.
That makes the 8%, in my opinion, not my opinion. I don't think it's an opinion.
I think logically.
Yeah. It's like you're full of crap.
Well, because if 92% of the time you devalue humans, right? Because the idea that you can commit violence against another person means that you are placing their value below yours.
Right.
That's just a fact.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the only way you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, taking advantage of a female to meet your sexual needs.
Right.
Without any buy-in of how that's going to, you know, make her feel. Baby, emotionally, you know, all these different things.
Yeah.
Again, it's the same. It's the same thing. You know, you're putting your needs against or above, you know. Anyway, so it's like it blows my mind. And you had brought that up in an earlier podcast when we were talking about, you know, I think John Lennon came up and some of his history. And I can't remember who else we were talking about. But anyway, there were some other artists that came up that had these issues in their life with the content of their music. It's kind of flip-flopped, actually, you know. But it's like, come on, can we, like, wake up already and, like, look at things for what they really are?
Yeah.
You know, let's not let everybody tell us how to think, you know, ask some questions.
That'd be nice.
It would be really nice. Maybe we'd have a sound mind.
Stevie, did you just name drop? Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, that would be nice.
It would be nice.
Yeah.
How you doing, man?
I'm super tired.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. But yeah, we're all a bunch of sheeple, so that probably won't happen.
Sheeple.
Yeah.
That's a good word. What do you mean?
Sheeple?
Yeah.
Wait, there's a shepherd.
Yeah.
And he's leading all of the sheeple.
Yeah.
To where he wants them to go.
Right.
And we're just, meh.
Right.
Meh. And then we just go along.
Yeah, let's not be sheeple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's use our brains.
Let's use our brains. Yeah, so, I mean, are you okay with it? Like,
okay with what?
92%.
Violence and killing?
No, are you okay with, like, how do you feel about if the content of an artist, you know, is this, and then they go and they make this huge stance on an issue that has nothing to do with anything they've come out with before. I mean, how do you feel about it when you see that be popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, even though their last 5 top 10 hit songs were this, like, yeah.
I think people see themselves in it, and so they're okay with it.
Hmm.
So they recognize that they themselves have, I mean, it's just a theory, but they recognize that they themselves have, I don't know if you want to say moral inconsistencies,
mm-hmm.
right? We make really strong stances about certain things, and then we overlook other things because that's too difficult. I don't want to think about that right now.
Mm.
And so there's always like the popular moral stance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without really thinking of the consequences. I'm going to say someone's name, Jordan Peterson. I've watched some of his YouTube videos. For those of you who don't know, Jordan Peterson is a slightly controversial Canadian, which never thought I would say that.
Oh, yeah. That sounds inconsistent in the statement itself.
Right. He's associated with alt-righters and like right-wingers and stuff, but all of his content on YouTube, because he has like hundreds of classes, he teaches at a college, is my understanding. But almost all of his videos are just lectures, right, that he gave, mm-hmm. and they were recorded. And a lot of them just have to do with social, like, how to deal with social issues. And he wrote a book on, I don't remember the name of it, but it's just basically like how to be a better man was the idea. And he was talking about women's rights, and his position was, of course women should be able to work, right? Like, that's an obvious thing. But there was a consequence. There was a price to be paid. And he talked about how in the 70s, people started getting paid less. And that's a trend that has continued up to today. And that's because the workforce has doubled. And so what happens when you introduce twice as much of something into a market? Its value decreases by half. So now we have twice as many people working. So your value as a worker has gone down. So now we have, you know, because the idea was, okay, a single person working in the family should be enough to pay for all of the bills, right? If they have a good job. That's not really the case anymore, but it's because a part of the reason, it's not the whole reason, but a big part of the reason is because our workforce is massive. And that was a consequence of women joining the workforce. And was that like a morally bad thing to happen? No, but it was just there's consequences to everything.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be like a moral issue. That's just how nature works.
Well,
right?
And we have this tendency when there's something lopsided or we get worked up about an injustice that we see to swing hard the other way.
Yeah.
And it to be equally as unbalanced the other way. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, that happened with that too, you know.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. I'm not an expert in it by any means, but I thought it was an interesting statement because I'd never heard that. And it's been a while since I've seen it, so I apologize if I misquoted him in any way, but that was essentially his statement. And I think that we kind of do the same thing with certain things today, kind of coming back to what we're talking about. Like, we pick an issue and we're all up in arms about that issue when there's so many other things, so many other things that are more severe in their effect. But we're ignoring those things because those are harder to be upset about, mm-hmm. and we might lose something taking that away.
Right. Yeah, I think especially when we get, like, social issues, when we get so politically minded or worried about offending someone, like, that should never be a reason why you don't have deep conversations with people.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm having a conversation with someone about something controversial, for the sake of, like, hey, let's, you know, either we agree or we don't agree or whatever, but my purpose in that conversation is to find out what the other person's thinking and to bounce this idea, and, you know, it's not worrying about offending them or two, feeling like, you know, scared of how this whole other group of people is going to feel about what I say. Like, yeah. It's with, like, any other conversation, it should be relational.
Yeah. I don't think you should be offended by words. I don't know if that's a controversial statement.
Yeah.
But because really all words are is the ability to convey an idea. Are we offended by ideas? Why? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people can be wrong.
Right.
That shouldn't offend us.
Yeah.
We just correct them. Like, if you're in a math class, someone gives the wrong answer, you just say, no, that's not the right answer. Mm-hmm. You don't get offended. Like, oh, how could you even say that 5 + 4 = 12?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just correct. Actually, no, that's not true.
Right.
But we're really good at being offended by ideas, and I'm not really sure why. Right. Like, I don't know what good it does. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have to draw a line between hurt and offended. You know, because I do think that you can be hurt by words, and I think that obviously If you're getting hurt by words from someone you don't know, then they have too much ground in your life as a stranger.
Oh, yeah.
As
yeah.
a stranger.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, when you're a kid, man, that's really hard. Like, you yeah. can't. You just are a sponge for what everybody says, and so it sucks, especially in middle yeah. school. That could be, like, the most, you know, extreme time to get negative things said. But what yeah. I'm saying, in general, as an adult, you know, if you're hurt by something that a stranger says, like, they got too much stock in your life. However, if you're hurt by words from someone you know, like, that's legitimate, you know, because they have a place in your heart. But again, like, we're going to have a conversation about that and be able to mend it, because that offense, maybe offense is a horrible word to call it because we're painting a line between hurt and offense, but
sure.
that hurt is because of the relationship that exists.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
because you're saying you're right and I'm wrong, right?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like if I tell my wife, you know, something hurtful that's contrary to what a husband should say to yeah. his wife, and she's hurt by it, like, that's, you know, that's legit. But I think that, again, like, that line's been crossed. When I hear arguments about offenses, they use some of the argument to, you know, plead their case is this hurt part, which I think is completely different, you know.
Yeah.
Did I say that? Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I would love, I mean, and I'm still in a point where I can be hurt by words in certain contexts, like you were saying.
Yeah.
But I think that I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody should. I think you should be able to point out, like, hey, like, you shouldn't have said that because that is contrary to our relationship.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should ever be hurt by words. I think that that's, again, saying that as someone that is hurt by words.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should all be immune to that. I think that we should all be above that. But, you know, that's something that I am working on. And I feel like I've improved in the last few years in that area. And part of it is that I've been so desensitized because I work at a boys' home.
Right.
You know, and yeah. I get called all kinds of things. And you just laugh.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wow, I've never heard that word before.
Right.
Sarcastically, of course.
Yeah.
You've heard it 1,000 times. You know, and it's just, you kind of get
thick skin.
Yeah, you get a thick skin, but also, like, and I've noticed this in the way that I joke as well, like, I've gotten a lot more, like, careless mm-hmm. with the way that I joke,
mm-hmm.
and that's come to bite me a few times because I'm just so, like, desensitized to, like, what could be offensive to people.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what has led me to that point of being like, why get offended? It's pointless. Like if you think I shouldn't have said that, I'm perfectly open to hearing criticism, so of course I'm going to hear you out and be like, you know, if I shouldn't have said that, I apologize, right? Yeah. If I'm wrong, that's fine. But,
yeah. And see, this is one of those instances where, like, I feel like I've kind of went a full circle in that thinking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you were like me at one point?
Uh-huh. Completely. Yeah. And yeah. I would, you know, teach it, think it, like, and then I shifted, you know, some, and now I feel like I'm on the other end of it. It's so weird. Okay, so I'll give you quick kind of timeline, but
yeah.
When I was in that mindset, my stance was, you know, when something's right, and you're hurt by it, like, that's your problem. So I zeroed, like, and that was, I mean, that's how I thought, and that was, you know, how I acted. And if you had a problem with what I said and I felt like I was in the right, then, like, we'll talk about it, and I defend my position, and you're still hurt by what I said, and it's like,
right.
that's yours to dig through and deal with, and let me know when you get over it, mm-hmm. and then I move on with life, right?
Right.
Well, that didn't work very well in my marriage, and I get, like, we're flawed human beings, right? So that's a huge factor in what we're talking about here. I think having daughters, I have sons too, I mean, obviously, but my daughters, I feel like, have taught me, and my wife, for absolutely foremost, you know, that I believe that women, I believe all people, but they have taught me that they need to hear something from me, you know, that communicates love. So it's like,
yeah.
And so here, part of what, let's put a pin in that and I'll kind of get big picture. So I had this thinking with that, even on a bigger level, like, my relationship with God is mine, and I don't really need the church, right, or need people in my life to help me with anything, but will use it if it's available. And same with me, right? Like, I'm here to contribute. If you have it, like, take it, leave it. If you hurt me, it's okay. I need to get everything I need from the Lord, and you, I don't need anything from you. But, like, if God wants to give me something through you, then great, I'll receive it, kind of thing. And it was crazy. Now I'm to, like, I just in the last year or two have come into this other place where it's, like, crazy, man. When I first came in, I needed people in a way that was super unhealthy, right? Like, mm-hmm. I need you to tell me what grocery store to go shopping at, because I don't want to, like, I was coming off drugs. Like, I leaned on people in a very unhealthy way, like codependent, right?
Right.
Then I went through this other piece that I am describing to you now of, like, no, I don't need anybody. Like, I'm building strength, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm, like, just in the last year, crap, man, I need people.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in an unhealthy way. And, you know, we talked about this before, but Charlie leaving was a big part of that, you know, for me. God was already speaking it to me, but with him leaving, it just opened that thing back up. And I'm like, yeah. Wow. Because
for context, Charlie is a friend of ours.
Oh, yeah.
Who left the state.
Left the state, yeah. Here I am having a friendly conversation on camera.
Yeah, I thought I would just drop that.
No, it's really good, yeah. So we got close, and he left, and I was like, crap, this hurts.
Yeah.
You know?
My heart pines for Charlie.
And I think that it's kind of like this. Like, you as a son, right? Mm-hmm. God forbid any son ever hear these words. You as a son, your dad's loved you your whole life, right? And when you're 40 years old, your dad says, I wish you were never born. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, I think it's impossible for that to not hurt a son. Like, I think that we're wired, you know what I mean, for things.
Well, you know, like we talked about earlier, it's a pain response, right? That's why it's, you call it hurt. Like, yeah. You've been hurt internally, like on a spiritual or emotional level, however you want to say it. Yeah. But that's to say something is now, that was incorrect for our relationship is what that statement is.
Right.
But my position is that as you grow, you should be able to recognize that something is wrong without necessarily feeling the effect.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's different in like a really close relationship. Like I will grant you that for sure.
Yeah.
Like, but I do think that as we grow, it's like, it should be less of an issue. It should be like,
yeah,
you know,
no, I get
like
that.
You know, and like I said earlier, I'm totally accepting of criticism. So if someone is like, hey, I'm hurt by what you said, I'm not going to be like, psh, get over it, you know, because I'm, you know, they're at where they're at, you know.
Right.
I'm just saying that we should be growing towards still being vulnerable, but not being so dependent on other people's words to dictate our own thoughts and emotions.
Right. And again, like, the reason why I brought that up isn't to be like, oh, you're wrong and I'm right. Like, we're having a conversation about something that we think differently about, you know, at this moment in life.
Yeah.
And like I said, in a year from now, I might think different and you might think different. But yeah, I believe that family and community, that there's emotional needs that we have that we need in a healthy way from them. And because of that need, there is the ability when it's violated, it hurts. You know, it's against, like, I believe that, you know, yes, there's neurology involved with how your brain responds to those things. But like on a deep level, like us as like souls or spirits, or, you know, for lack of a better terminology, it's a good terminology, I believe. But there's things in us.
Our thought worm.
There you go, whatever, that we need to hear, you know,
mm-hmm.
like children. The reason I believe that, and we've been on the tangent with this, but the reason I believe that middle school kids are so sensitive is because, like, if you look in every other culture, right, that's the time when you cross over. That's the time when, like, in tribes, like men call boys into manhood and women call girls into womanhood, right? Like they take them on quests and there's, you know, they might have to bring back a lion.
I've got a whole story about that, but maybe another podcast.
Another podcast. Those are great. So, but anyway, my point is the reason why I feel like kids at that age are so susceptible is because that is the age when they need to be imparted identity the most. Mm-hmm. You know, and all these changes are happening and they're in the middle of that.
They're getting pubes.
Right. And again, I the statistics, right? I said right.
I'm trying right?
to brush over. The statistics about, you know, husband and wife households, you know, father and mother in the same house raising the kids, they're crazy. Like so many of these, our kids are growing up in single households.
Yeah, and again, to me
that goes back to the issue we started with, not taking responsibility for the choice that was, you know, the most important.
Yeah, and even societally, again, I like injecting societal reasoning.
Yeah,
I mean, moral reasoning is great. Yeah, but societal reasoning is great too.
Yeah, it should be it should be evident all in all facets.
It's scientifically proven that pairs raise kids better than a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
But just society, and I don't want to go too deep into it. That was just an interjection. Yeah. But yeah, that's, I think it's important to note. But
yeah. Yeah. If you're a teen, if you're a middle school kid or young kid that, you know, isn't getting told, like, you know, things like, hey, I love you. I want you here. You are going to change the world. You can do whatever you want to do. Like, you are smart. You are brilliant. You are loved. You are, like, if you're not receiving identity statements like that from people who are raising you up when you're young, you're going to receive them somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and what's valued on the middle school playground, or, you know, what's valued in these circles, when you don't have somebody that's giving you that, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, to hurt words, but, and you should grow, like, you should grow strong in your identity, who you know you are, right?
Yeah.
But my wife is under my armor, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's no way around it. My dad, even though, like, anyway, I won't get into that. My dad is under my armor.
Well, and it's like going back to the thought worms.
Yeah.
Right. As larvae, we are squishy. And, you know, anything could just pop us.
Right.
You know, just pop.
Yeah.
We're like little white pustules.
We're all sensitive, like there's no shell.
But as you get older, you know, you develop like this outer armor. Mm-hmm. You get those little bug horns, you know. I forget what those are called. Hercules beetles, I think. Those horns that pop out the front.
Yeah.
Beast mode.
Those are cool.
But they have a fleshy... You know, there's fleshy parts, you know, right. Still.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, I would say that's, you know, to continue with the thought worm analogy, that's the part of us that's vulnerable.
Right.
But why expose your vulnerable underbelly to someone who is undeserving of said squishy, lovey bits? You know what I mean?
So good, yeah.
That's part of what I'm talking about as well, is just like,
having healthy boundaries.
Yeah, like don't let other people dictate your emotions, mm-hmm. you know, especially if they have no right to. Mm-hmm. You know, like my beautiful, loving wife has the privilege mm-hmm. of offending me.
Right.
And I have the privilege of offending her.
Right.
Because we expose our soft underbellies to
right.
each other.
Right. That's so good. You know, the power of healthy boundaries.
Healthy underbellies.
Yeah. Which is interesting, like in Christian circles, I think that there's a large there's teaching without saying it of like you should be completely open to all people at all times, like, you know what I mean, you need to put yourself out there, you need to, you know, and it gives us this false sense of like, yeah, you know intimacy is built over time,
yeah,
you know, whether it's friendship, intimacy in friendship, or intimacy, you know, in the opposite sex, you know, with your wife or your husband or whoever. There are people that are acquaintances, and there are people that are friends and family, and there are people that are strangers. And there should be a different level to the access they have.
Yeah. totally.
On your life and the effect that their actions have on your life, you know?
Yeah, that's why before you make plans, you know, you talk with your spouse, like, hey, I want to do this, you know, not to necessarily get permission. Mm-hmm. I don't really like that kind of terminology.
Right.
But your lives are intertwined.
Right.
And so you're just acknowledging
this, like, will affect
hey,
you.
Yeah. Like, and you know, and I think that that's just a common courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some relationships that are like that, that are like, hey, I need to get permission from my wife, or I need to get permission from my husband.
Right.
But that's just bogus. Right. Man.
Well, I think sometimes, like, you know, there are jokes like that, but what you're saying is that's the motive. That's the real motive is.
It should be, yeah.
Yeah, is honor, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, same thing. If I was going to make a huge decision on the podcast, like how we distribute, or, you know what I mean? Like who.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, by the way, I just picked up 4 sponsors. You know, like, hopefully we're talking about those things and making those decisions together. Because
yeah, did you pick up 4 sponsors?
I wish, man. Oh,
yeah,
hey, if you're out there and you're a sponsor, pick us up. We'll pick you up.
Yeah, in our cars.
Right. Wow. All right.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Sound Mind.
Is the podcast that we do.
It is. And it's on all the podcast type platforms.
Except SoundCloud, because they make you pay money.
Right.
Which is
stupid. Actually, we are on SoundCloud.
Are we really?
Yeah.
Are
but you can only have 3 hours of content. So I think only our episode 2, 3, and 4, because I didn't stay current with it. So if you like, you know, 2, 3, and 4 are on SoundCloud.
Well, there you
but
go.
Then we hit our 3 hour limit. So. Yeah. Also, we're filming this and recording the audio in Skytree Studios in Spokane, located at Zion Spokane. Check us out. Look us up. Like the page.
It's a great studio.
Subscribe to the channel. Comment on this stuff. We want to engage with you and have you on, maybe. If you want to be on, you're interested.
Maybe we should, because... we don't get a lot of YouTube views, but if you're watching this on YouTube, like, drop a comment, and then we'll look later on, maybe not next episode, but we'll look at the comments.
Yeah.
And talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is probably our most, like, out there one in terms of, like, content, but...
Right.
And then we have an email.
Yeah, we
which
do.
Which is posted somewhere, right?
It's going to Skytree Nation plus podcast. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Skytree Nation plus sign podcast.
Or you can just mention podcast in the subject.
At Gmail.
And it'll go to the correct folder.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool though.
Science.
Awesome.
Words.
So, till next time.